How's it going, mate?
Good. Yeah, it's just started to get a bit windy again because we had a lovely day yesterday and it's building up again.
Right.
Ah, all the drama of bloody Putin and all his attacks and everything. So, I mean, it's pretty tough times, aren't they?
Yeah, it's looking pretty grim. So, sure. So that's a nice escapism talking about Griffey Park.
Yeah. And especially after the last result, sadly.
Yeah. And even that's, it's getting concerning, isn't it? But I agree with what you said. I don't think we'll get relegated.
No, well, don't forget, it wasn't too long ago that everybody was, pretty positive. You had your games against Fulham. And who else was it that you had a draw? We drew also against
QPR.
Yeah. So, I mean, I just always have this gut feeling that when we play against a team in the bottom, it just seems that we always do badly against them. It's a constant sort of like thing where you think, oh, no, it can't be. We're just going to walk all over them. And then, boom, you get beaten. So, it is as it is, but I don't think there's no way they'll go down. I don't really see that the three at the bottom are going to be able to get the points, which is going to be enough to catch up. And City will win some games because there's other clubs who are in just as big a problems. So I think that should be okay.
No, I agree. I think even last night, the teams around us managed to lose. So just we need to avoid defeat on Saturday, don't we, really, to stop a run.
It's a big game. You're right there because, on the back of a game against one of the teams in the bottom three, you've got another one. And I saw the interview with Schotter and he more or less was going on about the fact that he wanted a reaction again. So yes, I think it's a big game, not only just for the team, but I think also for Schotter as well, because he's going to have to start thinking about, is my system working? Why is it not working like it did before? Is it got is it a mental thing? Is it, it's a tough one. It really is. It's a tough one.
In terms of your work now, I read that you're like a manager, an agent for a manager kind of thing, or managers.
I don't like the word agent.
Right.
I'm a mediator. Basically what it is, Harry, to let you know how I got into this, what I'd done after I'd stopped coaching, I started trying to place Dutch coaches all around the world and worked quite well. There was a coach I took to China. Anyway, after that, the Dutch coaches weren't so popular. If you remember rightly, Frank de Boer, who was at Crystal Palace, got sacked in no time. So all of a sudden, I didn't get any interest anymore for the coaches. So I thought, shoo, man, I've got to think out of the box again. Now, because of my network, I thought, well, Rob, why don't you try and see if you can get investors for clubs? And I've been close twice, to actually helping with a deal. Because what I do, my strength is that I get the decision makers by the clubs, but I also have the investors will approach me directly. And that's really what's gone on. It's not easy, Harry, it's not easy. I'm not going to say to everybody, it's just the click of your fingers that you're going to get a deal, but I enjoy it. And I'll succeed. I will get one club at least. I will do.
Have you ever had anyone approach you about buying City?
There's obviously been rumours that I was involved with something and could be right.
Fair enough.
But that's something which has got to be respected, because this is also really important in the line of work when you're doing this, is to keep everything as discreet as you possibly can, because not only are you protecting yourself, but you're protecting the club. And, you know, that's for me is, it's the past now. So, I mean, it's, and it was a good talk, in all fairness, you know, it's not as if it was, scandalous, because I know exactly what the people in Hull would be thinking. First of all, if you do sit down with the old owners, but no, nothing at all. It was a smooth thing, and basically what more or less it came down to was that the investor couldn't come up with the money in the long run. There was something which broke down. So end of story. Period. So that would have been nice. That would have been really nice.
Okay, mate, then if we go back, obviously, as a Hull lad, what are your first memories of Boothroyd Park?
I think the first thing what always springs to mind, and I was talking to my mum the other day on the phone, because she's still alive. She's living down Priory Road. And was me walking from Priory Road every day to the ground, because I didn't have a car, didn't have the money to buy a car, and so I used to walk. That was my warming up, more or less, is the half hour walk from the bottom of Priory Road just before Cotty, and then going all the way down to Boothroyd Park. So that's more or less. One of my vivid memories, which I do have. The other one is the Stoke game, Stoke City. I got taken to Hull City with the mother of Mike Young. Mike Young is actually Matt King. He's a local singer. He was a damn good goalkeeper for Bricknell Rangers as well. And, you know, I went with them, and I just remember it being absolutely chock-a-block, and the atmosphere was, it was electric. And I think that more or less confirmed the fact that I just wanted to be a professional footballer. So they're the, and also the tunnel, you know, we used to come in the side entrance to come to the dressing room, but the tunnel always was a bit intimidating in some ways. You know, it leads through to the manager's office, it leads through to the changing rooms. Now, there are things which, when you're as a supporter and you're walking through that tunnel to go to one of the stands and you're passing that, but all of a sudden you're going into them doors, it's different. So they're the three memories of Boothroyd Park, as Boothroyd Park is. We played on a great field. I think it was Stan Coombs was the groundsman then. Absolutely brilliant field. So, there, I would say there'd be the things which spring to mind straight away.
Yeah, I always think about, you know, you hear the attendances from back in the day, like 40-odd thousand. It's just hard to imagine for someone like me, but it must have been amazing, yeah.
It was good. It was really good.
So what, in terms of actually getting involved with City then, what was the process there?
Well, I was good at school, and I was consistently being picked for the schoolboy teams. And this is when Barry Lawton, who was a big scout, a good scout in them days, who used to come and watch school games, but also sometimes he'd come to watch the Sunday League. So I was playing three games a weekend. On the Saturday morning, I'd play for the school. On the Saturday afternoon, I'd play for the fourth team of Hull City, which was an amateur, all a bunch of promising amateurs who could, have a good chance of trying to become professionals for Hull City. And Sunday, I played for the Sunday League with Bricknell Rangers. And Fred Smith, he approached me and said, "Look, I'm going to come round and have a chat with you know, with your mum, and you know, we'll discuss about you trying to come to Hull City as an apprentice. I don't know if you've seen that story flying around about I could have gone to Reckitt and Coleman's.
Right now.
Oh, listen to this one. This is incredible, this one. God, blimey. Mum had she'd seen an advertisement. There were six positions what you could go for to work at Reckitt and Coleman. Now, you know yourself, Reckitt's a great company in Hull. And for my mum, who, you know, my dad had left when we were younger, so she was by herself and brought us up. The three of us, I've got a brother and a sister with practically nothing, but she did a great job. And so she was looking towards security. So anyway, I said, okay, I'll go along. And blow me down, I got right to the last 12 people who got who got interviewed. And the woman said, oh, I think you're going to make a really good chance of getting a job. I said, you what? I said, I'm useless. So with that, she said, look, I'll give you 2 days. Anyway, Fred Smith come, and my mum straight away said, oh, Mr. Smith, sorry, but we've been approached by Ricketts and Robert, because she calls me Robert. She said, he's got a good chance of going to Reckitt and Coleman. So Fred looks at me, he said, Rob, he said, I thought you wanted to be a footballer. So I'm like this the whole time. And he left, he said, look, I'm going to give you 1 day, you know, not longer, 1 day. So we were sat together, it must have been easily about half an hour, and we're just gazing into thin air. So mum got up and she said, right, let me phone Ricketts that, you know, that you're going to come. I said, mum, no. And I remember I was 16, right? And I just said, listen, how do you realise how many kids would give their right arm to have a chance to, you know, to go into football? I understood my mum because of the risks of professional football, that it could easily go wrong. But anyway, to cut a long story short, I just said, look, give me the chance, and if it doesn't work out, it's my fault. So I became an apprentice. That's a great, I love telling that story. Oh, man.
Makes you think how many people did get talked out of trials and stuff like that to get a proper job, as you put it.
I understand parents, certainly. You want the best for your kids. I mean, I've got kids as well. So, I mean, none of them have gone on to become professional footballers as such, but you always want the best for them. So you try and choose or try and help them in whatever way. And my mum did that as well. You know, I understood her fully, but she knew how good I was at football at that time. I mean, I was scoring goals for fun, loads. And I mean, lots and lots of goals. I don't want to be arrogant, but it were lots and lots of goals at that time. And there was a lot of interest, so it was good.
Yeah, yeah. And in terms of, like, you say apprenticeship, is it a classic thing where you're, like, doing your jobs around the ground and helping out the senior players?
Yeah. We got allocated different jobs. Some would clean the bath out and in the dressing room. My job was to clean the boots, the first team players' boots. And then we would we'd have to clean the terraces. Had its advantages sometimes, because with supporters jumping up and down, money fell out of the pocket. So it was quite often that we'd pick up some money. I'll be honest, I'll tell you another quick story. I broke two brushes deliberately, because I was just, my first year didn't go the way I wanted it to. And I stood there and it was freezing. I mean, freezing. You know what Hull can be like when it's wintertime. And I just lost it. So I sort of like, boom. And I said to the lads, I'm off. I want to be a footballer. I don't want to be a sweeper. So anyway, with that, Phil Holmes, I've got a lot to thank Phil for, because he came round and he just said, listen, you know, who do you think you are? Everybody's got to do it. George Best did it. Bobby Charlton did it. So, you know, who's Rob McDonald compared to people like that? So in the second year went much, much better. We won the league, and Sand Pro. So that was, but they were the main things what we had to do in and around the stadium. And on match day, we had our games quite often in a Saturday afternoon as well. So we didn't really get a chance to. We just got in maybe for the last 10 minutes, 15 minutes that we'd be able to go and watch the game. So that was the life of an apprentice. And you'd play in the junior team. And if you were lucky, you'd get a chance to also play on a Tuesday with the reserve team. And that was, you know, that was it.
What type of characters were around at that point in terms of senior players? Was it Andy Davidson still like looking after the players and people like Chiller?
Well, Andy was certainly when we had our 18v18 in the gym, and we did that nearly every day. Honest, we must have been in there every day. I think you could count on two hands how many times we went out on the field. Honest, it was 18v18. Andy would pick his teams. He'd make sure that he'd pick the best players because he always wanted to win. And even if he was losing and the time was up, he'd still carry on. He'd say, no, 5 minutes more. It was great. I mean, we laughed about it. But I'm looking back in, I'm looking back and I'm thinking, well, what do we really learn? What did we sort of like, you know, what do we get coached? We just had to rely on our natural, you know, gifts, what we had, whether you'd be strong, whether you'd be good in the air, whether whatever. But no, I mean, Andy was a big character. And you'd get, I mean, Chris Galvin, he was funny. And then we had Dennis Booth, people like that. Not so much that they were funny in the training sessions, because they were serious. They were good profs. I mean, once you get in the dressing room, I mean, I've been absolutely in stitches with some of the things what they used to come out with. Brilliant. but no, I mean, I was really, really shocked to think that that was the type of training what we had as a beginner in professional football.
Yeah, I read that you said once you moved to Holland, it kind of made you realize how different or simple it was back in England in terms of coaching.
Yeah, well, you've got to break it down to a couple of things. I mean, I had somebody called Bill Scott, who was my manager when we was in the Sunday League team, Bricknell Rangers. He was a Scottish bloke, pretty quiet, pretty placid, but he knew his football tactically. We played a 3-4-3 in them days. I mean, 4-4-2 was, everybody played 4-4-2. If you would try another system, everybody would start laughing at you. And like I said, Barry was an important person. But Pete Sissons, he helped me a hell of a lot. He more or less helped through the development period from coming from an amateur club like Bricknell Rangers and the school team, Priory Road, going through to an Hull Grammar, going through to the professional side of things. But Pete didn't get really the chance to coach us as much as what I think he would have liked to, because we only trained. We always got invited to the gym. Okay, the gym. I think it was every Tuesday and every Thursday. And it was basically a lot of game stuff. And I'm sure that Pete would have loved to have given us some more coaching, because Pete was good. So, and with Phil, Phil was an ex-striker, so he gave me a lot of help. With Chris Chilton, I had Chris also as a youth coach. I could pick up some things from Chris as well. So, and Ken Houghton, Ken was great, but not really the sort of training which I got when I was in Holland. That really woke me up at all. Exactly, it just sort of got me so buzzed. And I could feel as I was getting improving, as a player.
In terms of making your debut for the first team, then I'm right in thinking it was John Kay who gave you your debut.
Yeah, John signed me also as a prof.
Did you see that coming, the debut? Or was it a bit of a sudden thing?
That's a good one. I most probably would have been shocked. But then again, I had such a good second year. We were champions with the youth team. We had a cracking team with Brian Marwood, Stephen McLaren. Steve didn't play much, but he was part of the team. We had the Holmes twins, which I don't know if you've heard of, the Hazel lads, poor, really hard, and I think they should have made it as a prof. Gareth Roberts, Steve Richards, players who were decent, Craig Norrie, and we won the league easily. So I think maybe to reward me and to give the youth a chance, because there was nothing, at that stage, I don't think there was a real great deal hanging off on the game. And I loved it. I just Billy Bremner just took me before the game. He said, come on. And we were just passing the ball to each other just so that I could get relaxed and just get the feel of the ball and give me a couple of tips and stuff like that. Now, we won 4-1. Malcolm Lord scored a hat-trick. I didn't score. There was one shot that just went past. It went well. I felt good about it. So that was a proud moment as well, yeah.
And I'm reading that I think it was your third game you played at Chelsea away in front of 40,000. What was that like for an 18-year-old?
Well, yeah, I didn't really get much of the ball that game because Chelsea were just so dominant. It was an experience. It was a proud moment to be playing, against people like, Ray Wilkins and Peter Bonetti, them type of people who you've followed, before your career, before you've even started coming to the club as an apprentice, you followed them years. And then all of a sudden you're on the same pitch as them. So, but I'm one of them types where up to about 10 minutes before the game, I'll be fretting about it. I'll be thinking, oh man, be careful you do this, be careful you do that. And then as soon as I get onto the field, it just seems to, and I just go out and I just think, well, just enjoy yourself, do what you can. And that's stood me in good stead for the career I've had.
And then obviously you get your first goal against Southend at home. What do you remember about that?
Well, I played as a central defender, because Stuart Croft was injured. And I think, Ian Dobson was also injured. So the boss got me in and he said, listen, I'm going to play centre-half. I played alongside Paul Haig. And I think I went up for a corner. Was it a free kick? One of the two. And scored. And I ran the whole length of the field because Tony, Chris Galvin was going on. He said, oh, he said I was all right for about the first 10 yards. He said, but the other 90, I couldn't catch it. It's typical some of what Chris would say. But anyway, we won the game 2-0, if I remember rightly. And it was a good header. But it was a bit of a pity because the only two goals which I did score for City, the other one was against York. And I played as a fullback there. And it was also from a corner. Not a header. It was there was a ricochet, and I could shoot into an open goal. So I was a bit peeved that I didn't score as a striker. But English football, Harry, wasn't suiting me. And the reason why I can say that now is because I go to another climate and another type of way of playing, which made me understand that the 4-4-2, me running into channels, it didn't just sort of like suit my game. And I'm one of them type of strikers where I need to get a load of service from the wings. And I just didn't really adapt to it. And even when I came back to play for Newcastle, it was the same, you know, I could see the same things happening again. I thought, oh, shit, Rob, you're going to have to battle, and I mean really battle, to get yourself, you know, a steady place in the first team. So, you know, it was just a pity that I didn't score any goals as a striker.
Yeah, would you say it's quite frustrating then if you were playing in positions you didn't want to play in overall with your time at City?
Well, I knew I had to help out, and it was easy. It was easier to play at the back than it was up front. I mean, it's easier to stop somebody than to be creative and to beat somebody. But I just said to Ken, was Ken had took over then, Ken Houghton. And I said, boss, you know, I just don't want to play as a central defender. I said, I'll do it if there's an emergency, don't get me wrong. I said, but I want to focus on the fact that I want to become, you know, I want to be a striker. And then Mike Smith came.
I was watching something yesterday that said Wilf McGuinness was a bit of a character. Like, what do you remember about him?
Wilf was great. He was a real motivator, good assistant. He's one of these who you need, you certainly need him on your side, because if he's against you, you've got a huge problem. But Wilf was absolutely besotted with football. He knew a lot and great motivator. I enjoyed the time with Wilf. Cyril Lee as well. In all fairness, if I was to compare Mike Smith with Cyril Lee, absolute huge difference. Mike Smith was a bit sort of like, you know, kept his distance, and then Cyril was always one who would talk with anybody. He didn't bother him who it was. He would get into you and say, look, you know, what's happening? How's everything at home? Stuff like that, you know, just give you that feeling as though you're part and parcel of the whole, you know, set up, the whole squad. And because there was a time when Halifax had come in and asked if I could go there on loan. Nah, we all know about the share, don't we? And Cyril just said to me, he said, Rob, don't do it. He said, don't do it. It's not going to do you any good. So I said, Cyril, look, don't worry. I've already decided I'm not going there. And then the Dutch thing came in, and then I could go over to Holland. So That was more or less the situation. But Wilf was, I liked Wilf. He was all right.
Yeah, with Mike Smith, and if we've not covered it already, like, did you know quite early on that you weren't going to be part of his plans?
He didn't like young players. Well, no. Well, let me just correct that, because that's maybe not fair on him looking back in hindsight. But let's just say he didn't give the young players a chance. Now, he brought in Alan and Bruce, so Alan Warboys and Bruce Bannister, smash and grab. And the rest of the team was more or less, you know, also pretty much experienced players. Gareth had broken through into the first team, so he was just starting to play. Dave Hawker, he was playing well. Other than that, I can't really think of many young players who we gave a chance. Craig Norrie, I remember Craig complaining, saying that he didn't get a chance because I brought Craig over to Holland when I'd left Wageningen, a club in Holland. So I didn't get the feeling that that Mike was into to the young players now.
Yeah, fair enough. And then obviously the move to Holland, when the offer comes in, like, what's going through your mind, really?
Well, bear in mind that we'd played a friendly game against this club called Cambuur in Holland. They came to Hull, and I played that game, and I had a good game. And I took them all out on the night to Romeo and Juliet. Why they asked me to take them out, don't ask me. There'll be a lot of people who most probably answer that for you. And anyway, I got in, you know, I got pretty well in with them. But then we went for a training camp in Holland the following season, in the beginning of the season. And we had a tournament there, and I had a really good tournament. And the manager, the coach of the club who'd come over, Cambuur, he wanted me to go back over there. He said, oh, he said, would you be interested in coming over? So I went there on loan. And then I came back and I got my place back in the first team again. And then Mike Smith came.
Right.
So when Mike come, he got me in the office and he said, Rob, he said, I've just had a phone call from Noel de Ruyter, who was the coach, and he'd gone on to another team in Holland who were playing in the Premiership. And then he said, they've made an offer, and if I'm honest, I don't see you having any future here at the club. So it was a bit of a knife in my back, but I understood it, and I'd rather him be up front and not sort of like, you know, play games. So I thought, okay, and I went for £18,000. Wow. And so I went over to Holland, and, you know, the rest was sort of like history.
Yeah. I mean, how quickly did you know that you're more suited to their style of play kind of thing?
After 3 weeks, because the reason why I can say that easily is that we played Ajax in Amsterdam and we beat them 4-2 and I scored twice. Yeah. You know what I mean? There's sometimes, and yes, I can imagine people will be watching and say, you know, easy to say that after three games. No, it's not easy to say that. But I just knew that it suited me because I was getting so much, you know, so many balls coming in from the wings because they played a 4-3-3. And the whole idea is to get the ball out to the wingers as quick as you can. They get past the fullback, cross the ball. I choose first post or second post. And, it was like everything just seemed to fit. The jigsaw puzzle was completely full. And it was great. And my first season was pretty good. We got relegated, but I scored 13 goals. And then I went on to another club where I scored 21 goals and then went on again to, you know, other clubs and ended up winning the league with PSV. So, no, what I also did, I like to try and build my own career step by step. So it was every club which I chose, it was that little bit better every time. So it was a bottom club. Somebody was sort of like mid-table, and then it was a sub-topper, and then it was PSV, boom, the top club. I played with Gullit, I played with Gerrit, Hans van Breukelen, Frank Arneson. Unbelievably great team. So that was a great moment.
Yeah, I mean, the obvious question is, like, what was Hullit like as a player and as a character?
There are some players who physically, they've got an aura about them. Billy Bremnader, even though he was a small bloke, and we knew about his Leeds United past, but even though you've had a great career like what Billy Bremner had, just the way how he holds himself, and everybody knew it was Billy Bremner, but he carried it off as a top player. And Gullit was just, you were 1-0 up when you were in the, you know, in the dugout, no, not in the dugout, in the entrance going to the field. People looking at him and just in awe of him. He was only 23 at that time, but he had some body. I mean, the hell, he was a real athlete. Great, absolutely. One of the best players I've ever played with, easily. Nice bloke as well.
And in terms of winning the league, was it a close run thing or did he kind of dominate the league?
Oh, we were about 5 weeks before the end. I've never been to so many parties in the 5 weeks. Everybody was inviting us out for, you know, to sort of like celebrate the, you know, the winning of the league. And Ajax were quite a distance behind us. So we were, like I said, within 5 weeks before the end, we were champions.
Yeah, amazing. Yeah. Obviously, must have been some massive crowds over there.
Yeah. I mean, I can't really say that PSV, what's their maximum? They'll have something like 45,000, 50,000, I think. So that's quite a lot, yeah.
Was it just that one season you spent there then? Was it Hullet who actually took your place kind of thing?
No. I came at the same time as Gullit came. And yeah. It was Wim Keefe who came to PSV at the time when I left. The reason why I left was because, like I told you about the career planning which I had, because I'd won the league and I still had a year to go of my contract, and I just thought, you know what, I'm going to ask them if they don't mind me being loaned to a top club in Europe. So Sporting Lisbon approached me. Now, for me, it was a no-brainer because they offered me 5 times more than what I was earning at PSV. And I love Lisbon. I think Portugal's a beautiful country anyway. And I just thought, yes, this is exactly what I want as far as my career planning goes. And then I goes over there, and there was only 2 foreign players could play. And one of them was Manuel Negrete. That was a Mexican who scored the first goal in, I think it was the Mexico World Cup against Belgium. He was a great midfield player. And the other player was Rafael Mead, who came from Arsenal. He'd had a bad season, apparently. So I was brought in to put him under pressure. Oh. And what happens? He starts scoring goals for fun. And he was good. I mean, we're very good friends still. He was unbelievable. So I thought, oh, shit. So I made my debut in the European Cup, scored 3 goals. I made my debut in the league itself, scored. And it just got to the stage where the head coach got me in, and he just said, Rob, listen, you're training well. Every time you've played, you've done well. But you can see that Rafael is doing really well. I can't drop him, just, you know. So I said, oh, that's good, because I don't want you to waste my time. And so then I went back to Holland again, because I was on loan, like I said. And then shortly after that, Newcastle came up. So that was another no-brainer. Now, I went on trial. I was at Wimbledon with a mad gang, crazy gang. And where else was I at? Somebody else I went. Anyway, I was at a couple of clubs on Sheffield Wednesday was another one. And then I went to Newcastle, and I just started scoring goals for fun in the training, and got signed there. And but then I was back to the 4-4-2 dilemma again. I even said to to Mike Smith, was it Mike Smith? Yeah, Smithy, yeah. And I just said to him, I said, boss, I said, you know about the Dutch league, you know, can't you change it? Because we had John Henry on the right hand side, Kenny Walton was on the left hand side. He had a good he could cross the ball. But John came inside all the time. I had Mirandinha. Now, Mirandinha is, I think, 4'9", little Brazilian striker, what he was. And it didn't work out. And I was really gutted, because to get to the top of, you know, more or less the Premiership, it wasn't the Premiership as it's called now, but it's the First Division. I was gutted about that, and it just didn't work out. So, I mean... So after that, I went to Turkey to a club called Beşiktaş.
Was Gascoigne at Newcastle at that point?
No, he just left.
Right.
He just left.
Okay. But, I mean, did you feel they had a point to prove in England? Was that, or was it just like kind of a move that
came around? I think that's a good question. I really thought I would have loved it if I'd have come back. Let's just say the move that I made to Sporting, if I had have come to England, I think I could have made a better job of it, maybe. But you just don't know. I mean, I could have still failed because of the, you know, the 4-4-2 thing, the way of playing. Like I said, I need a lot of service. Give me a lot of balls, and I'll do something for the club. So, and it just didn't seem like that. So. I'm not blaming others. I'm just saying it's just the way how the team was playing.
But yeah, I read that you left Besiktas because of financial problems with the club. Is that right?
Yeah.
And then you were able to finish your playing career strongly in Holland.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I did that deliberately because I was thinking then about my future, again, career planning, and I wanted to go into coaching. So it was an ideal moment to do that. So I've got my highest coaching honours. I can coach any professional team in the whole world. So I thought, and I went into coaching. So I coached in Holland. I coached in South Africa with the Ajax Cape Town. Ireland, I was there at Sligo for a little while, but they were an absolute mess. And where else? Slovakia, I said.
So you managed Trenčín, which obviously City Trenčín, fans will know from playing in Europe.
I had an interview in the match program. Before the game, more or less giving my opinion about what I would think about the game. All City against Slovakia, Trenčín.
How did you find management overall? Like, obviously, you've not done it for the best part of 10 years, but how was your experience as a manager?
Oh, I loved it. You know, anything what's to do with football, Larry, to be honest, and you can make a difference with something is what gives you the buzz. I'm 63 now, but I still want to do something. If there's something in football where you feel as though you can help, you can give something back, whether it be to youth, whether it be to communities, whether it be to a football club or whatever, it's great. I don't want to be sat at home, nattering with the missus and asking her, how many plants and how many flowers we got, please. So, it's always been something which it's a lot of stress. There's more stress when you're a trainer than a manager than as a player. I loved it as a player because it's more or less up to you as an individual. You do need a team, but if you're a striker and you score goals, you win games. So that was the pressure which you had as a player. When you're a coach, you've got to keep everybody happy. You've got to keep your staff. You've got to get your players, your supporters, your sponsors. Wow, you've got the whole club watching you. And when the results do go against you, it's a tough job. Mm. But I didn't, I got on with it. And yourself that when you're gonna, when you're gonna lose games as a manager, you're gonna get sacked sometime anyway. So
is that why obviously you can lean on that experience now to help other managers when you're working with them?
Yeah, in all fairness, there's been moments when I thought, could I be an assistant? And I think the older I'm getting, that could be something which I would think about. I don't think about being a head coach. I've been out too long as far as the coaching. Not that I couldn't pick up a team. I could easily pick up. It's about not just the tactical things, but it's also about the man management and how you treat everybody. But it's the stress factor. Sometimes you think to yourself, well, boo, is that maybe just that little bit too much for me at this moment? So I think sometimes you've got to be honest with yourself. But again, to help people and give advice, and whether they like it or not is completely up to them, of course. But and I think the youth, I think that's one of the greatest jobs what you can have, is by giving something back to to the youth, telling them about your own career, and also tell them about things outside of the football, because I think that's if you look at the boy at Manchester United, what's his name again, the winger, who had some problems with his girlfriend. What was his name?
Greenwood.
Yeah, Greenwood. You know, I think players should be helped from day one to the last day. And I'll even go a step further, even after the career. You know, I've been in touch with some players who have been at Hull City, Hull boys, who have gone on to amateur football. And, you know, you're asking yourself, because they come out with some stuff, and I'm thinking, whoa, they need some other, you know, some extra help. It's a big dream. And once your dream isn't going to be fulfilled, and you go on to, let's just say, amateur football, not that it's bad amateur football, because teams like North Ferriby, you know, they're not bad teams to play for. But everybody wants to be a professional. And the impact of failing is so huge. And I'm quite pleased, because I've read about it, that there's a lot of interest now about trying to help professionals who fall out of the game. I think that's also pretty important. And I think we got in many ways, it would be great to, as far as Hull's concerned, I'm sick to death of people knocking the city of Hull. It really gets me down. You know, a shitty city is what you always get. And even on Britain's Got Talent, there was a singer, and he said, oh, he said, I'm from Hull. And there was about one person who'd said something. He said, oh, what did he say? He said something like, oh, I didn't expect a good reaction to that. I'm thinking, man, don't say that. You know, we've got a great city. We've got people I know, once they get a buzz and once everybody's on the same wavelength, you can make something of the city. Honest, it really is. And I think that's what Ashun is seriously thinking of trying to do. And it's a bit of give and take. Of course, results, they determine a lot of stuff. But I think if the two powers can come together, because the public are just as important, maybe as important, more important than what, let's just say, an investor. But there are certain things which I think could be, you know, could also be worked on. And I'm sure, because I'm on, now, as you know, Hull City AFC Boothby Park. I'm on the 1904 Hull City Fans Forum. I'm on the Hull Footballers from the Golden Years and the Hull City Banter. So I'm getting all the vibes. So I'm seeing, I'm hearing what a lot of people are saying. And yeah. There's some of them where I think, oh, please give them a bit of time. And the great thing is because I'm neutral, and I've left Hull and gone over to, you know, gone abroad, it's given me another insight into a lot of things. But I've also come back often, because I come back to see my mum and my eldest boy who lives in Leeds, and my other family, of course. And of course, I see the things and I hear the things. I'm like, oh, please, please, let me just hear something positive. But to get something positive, you have to generate it. You have to create it. And I think it can be, there's some really good businessmen and people in business, what I've seen on LinkedIn. And you've got the whole Siemens thing with the wind. So let's try and make something of it, and let's try and help, you know, the community gets something going. So, you know, they're the type of things which I've passed around and more or less just said to people, look, think about that, because it gives you some, you know, some real focus on what we can do to make the city big again, you know, huge. There's a lot of poverty. We know that. But I don't see the reason why it can't be solved. And I don't think it's like that Ashun should throw a lot of money at people for nothing. It's got to be interaction. There's got to be, you know, and it's a great feeling that if you work for something and you get rewarded, it's the greatest feeling in the world. I'm becoming a bit political now.
It's all good, mate. It's all good.
I'm going to get all the Labour and Conservative MPs having a go at me on LinkedIn.
Yeah, we'll just finish on some social media questions, Rob. I think you've seen a few anyway, but one from Dave Batty is asking about the best player you played with, and Ryan thinking it's Billy Bremner.
Oh, City, yeah. That is Batty. Yeah. No, I don't want to do anybody else, too short to say that. But he was just supreme. Even at that age, that's what makes me more impressed about him, because even at that age, he was still... All the details, everything he coached, he was brilliant. I was quite in awe of Paul Ake because he played for the England, was it the under 21s? Yeah, would have been. And he was just that skillful player. It's strange, really, because I've got a couple of them on Facebook, Jeff Emmerman, Stuart Croft, Ian Dobson, Gareth, Pat Ed. And the old feelings which I have and had with the respect which I had for them, I still have it. I still sometimes feel as though I'm like the 16, 17, 18-year-old, which I was when I was back at Boothby Park, in awe of them players who were playing for the first team. It's weird. It's really strange. But in some ways, because of my background, because we were taught to really, respect and appreciate all the stuff what came our way. So, but Paul Ake was an exceptional player.
And then got Rob H on Twitter, who said, ask Rob if he remembers helping out at World Youth Club in the late 70s. I'm driving a green Opel Manta sports car with the FC Vanagon sponsorship on it.
Yeah, I got a car from them, yeah. Oh, I'll tell you another story really quickly.
Yeah, yeah.
When I'd been sold to Wageningen and we'd just beaten Ajax, the game I told you about that we'd beaten Ajax, I came back over to Hull to say, more or less say my farewells to the players. Anyway, they'd seen my car outside because it had my name on it and it was the name of the garage and it was bright green. I mean, really bright green. You couldn't miss it at all. And all the players coming in, oh, Rob, you've got the car. We've read about you scoring two goals against Ajax and beating them. And anyway, Mike Smith had sent Sue Lee. So Sue Lee comes to me and said, Rob, said the boss wants to see you in the office. Sent me home. He said, oh, he said, you're disrupting the dressing room. Oh, I loved it. That was my revenge. Or let's just say my way of saying, I could have been something, and I would love to have stayed at Hull City had it been, if I'd have been able to be successful. Hmm. So, yes, I did. I had a green car and it was, it was funny. It was funny, yeah.
We ever attempted to try and come back to City, like when you say you went to Newcastle, obviously they're a league above, but was there ever a chance?
Not really. In all fairness, Harry, I've applied to try and come and help the youth in the past and also maybe even scout in Holland. But you've got some damn good bloody young players. And if you do it properly, you can earn some good money on them. But I never got a reply, nothing at all. It was always... Blanco. So I just more or less give up, really. It's maybe one of them things where they stick to their own. And that's very much now in England. You'll see that it's jobs for the boys. I'm not saying that any coaches are bad coaches or even good coaches. It's something which... clubs have got to decide for themselves. There's a lot of money flowing through a club, Harry, and you've got to make sure that you get people in who are going to do a damn good job. Because at the end of the day, You know, the owner is the one who's going to suffer if it doesn't go right.
What's your high point of playing for City Hill Boothby Park?
My debut. And the reason why, another reason why, is because my grandfather was at the game. My mum, I thought my mum would come to the game, but she didn't, because she said she was too frightened that if I had a bad game. But my grandfather was there, and he was one who really influenced me, because there's no football in my family at all. Nobody. It was the 1966 World Cup what got me, and I was sold. And I found out that I could do a bit with the ball. And the Stoke game was an impression. It wasn't so much that it was a high point, but that also helped me become a footballer. But the debut was great, and to win 4-1 and to play nearly the whole game was my high point. Yeah.
What about in terms of a toughest opponent? Is there anyone that stands out
in England? When I was at Hull City, bloody hell, I do well remembering the names of Hull City players. Never mind players to play against.
Yeah, fair play.
There was a Cardiff defender who I can't Dyer. I think his second name was Dyer, but I'm trying to think of. I do remember playing against Mick McCarthy at youth level. He was at Barnsley and we were at Hull. He was tough as I don't know what. He gave me a really hard game. He was, yeah. Let me say Mick McCarthy, but that was for the youths. I don't remember. Harry, I'll be honest. Names. Because there's so many names in this 63-year-old brain, you've got to be happy that you can remember a third of them. So, no, I'd say Mick McCarthy. He was. I remember him really being a tough defender.
And then just one last one to finish on, like, we've kind of covered it really, but how do you reflect on your time at City, and is there anything you would do differently?
I wouldn't do anything differently, no. I would have liked the club to have done something differently, like coaches on, you know, specific things, tactical things. We would be taught anything about how to utilise, let's just say, one side of the field, counter football, nothing like that at all. So I would have really appreciated that. I think that would have, you know, made us a really good team. I'm sure that Don Revie did it with Leeds United in that time, because they just knew instantly how to play and how to find each other. So, but no. My mum always said, listen to your boss, because he's the one who gets paid the most money, and he gets paid good money because he's learned his trade. So I never had to go at any of the managers, coaches, or God knows what. Maybe I should have done, but when I came over to Holland, it was more open. You know, you were taught things, and you were asked if you understood. And if you didn't, they would go through it again. So they would take you apart. And it was, don't forget, the two best development countries in the whole world is Holland and Portugal. And the two best clubs played against each other last night, Ajax and Benfica. And it was a great game. I don't know if you saw it.
No, I've only seen the result, but yeah, I've talked to highlights.
Oh, it was brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. So no, I miss Hull City. I loved it. I'm a Hull lad. I still have a lot of contact with a lot of people back home. I follow what's going on now, and I'm following all my groups on Facebook. You'll never catch
that tiger. Thanks for listening to this episode of This Was Boothry Park. As always, just like to give a quick shout out to those who made the research easy, including OnCloud7, TigerTube Player, Tiger Bass, and Rich Gardens The Decade.